illuminating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A wonderful Wednesday to you. So glad you've joined me today. Another jam-packed show full of awesome stuff. You're going to want to give me a call, 1-888-914-9149, 1-888-914-9149. It's a toll-free number to call. You can also hit me up on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. There's also the show account, don't forget that, at Cale Clark Show. And you can email us, cale@relevantradio.com. Now, my understanding is, and a couple of people tweeted at me about this, Father Robert Spitzer was just on the Drew Mariani show at the end of the show talking about aliens. How can I top that? I don't know if I can. Father Robert Spitzer is an absolute brainiac. And if you heard that segment, I'm sure that he was doing his usual thing, which is being brilliant. One of the smartest guys I have ever heard in my life. Love that guy. Can't get enough. But what we have now, I'm not going to talk about aliens today, but what I am going to talk about is out of this world, as you will see. And that's my lame attempt at a pun. I'm going to talk to you about a Catholic take, my Catholic take on a movie that I saw over the break, and I haven't had a chance to talk about it on the show yet. It is the movie Soul, the Disney Pixar movie Soul. And I've been talking to producer Lucas about this. Over the holiday, I've been trying to catch up on my movies. I am so behind. Even over the holiday break, I only had time to watch two movies. One of them was Wonder Woman 1984, which I did a review of recently on the Cale Clark Show. And the other one was Soul. I was really interested in this from a Catholic perspective. And Lucas, I still haven't finished Hamilton. I know that you and your wife, Gina, watched that a long time ago. We talked about that.
Oh, man, you got to watch that. It's so good.
I finished Act 1. I got to the intermission. So and it was awesome. I loved it.
It is long, but it's definitely worth it.
I got to get back to that. Anyways, I got to finish Hamilton. It's one of my goals for 2021. But let's talk about Soul. And some minor spoilers ahead. I'm not going to blow the whole movie for you here. But Pixar's new movie, Soul, follows an aspiring jazz pianist named Joe Gardner. And Jamie Foxx is the actor who does the voice of Joe Gardner. And I'd love to be a voice actor in Hollywood. Sounds like easy money. You can just kind of show up in your pajamas. Kind of like what I'm doing right now on radio. No, I'm only kidding. Or am I? You'll never know until we start having this show on video. But anyways, Jamie Foxx, also known as Joe Gardner, that's the real character in Soul. He's a lover of music, especially jazz music. And he's an aspiring jazz musician, but he spends his day job is teaching music to kids in a school in Queens, in New York City. But it's very underfunded. The school is pretty run down. It's seen a lot of better days. But he's longing for his big break. He wants to really reach his potential. And the same day in the film, he lands a life-changing gig that could just transform his situation. But that same day, he has a terrible accident. His soul separates from his body and becomes this aqua blue blob. And he finds himself on a conveyor belt going up, 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 all the way to the quote-unquote great beyond. Now, he does not want this to happen. He is not ready for the afterlife yet, even if it's a good place. Doesn't want to go there. And he tries to find a way back to Earth. So this is really the premise of the movie. What I found about it, now I'll talk a little bit more about this in a few minutes, but what I didn't like about the movie is that I found the part that takes place in the modern day, in the real world, quote-unquote, in Queens, that was far more fascinating than their depiction of the afterlife, or the pre-life, if you will, which we'll get into in just a second. It's this disembodied, metaphysical world, and I thought that part of the movie was really lame and way too drawn out. Now, apparently there are some other Disney Pixar films that talk about this sort of theme, and I haven't, as you might have gathered from my opening comments, I haven't seen these films, Inside Out, which a lot of people think is maybe the best Pixar film of all time. I haven't seen Inside Out, and I haven't seen Coco. So you can tell me about these, whether they're worth watching. I'm not sure. You give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. Being the parent of a young kid, I obviously have to watch a lot more kid-centered films or animated films than I ever did before. But this is really a movie for, it's really targeted to an older audience in terms of the subject matter. So what's going on here is Joe, who has physically died, he finds his soul, this blue blob, in the great before. The great before. And this is a metaphysical state where new souls await human bodies. So it's this idea of a pre-existing soul. Is this a Catholic idea? We'll tackle this in just a minute, so hang with me. Now, while he's in the great before, Joe's soul is kind of mistaken for being a mentor, and he's linked up with soul number 22, who has yet to be united with a human body, this pre-existing soul, soul 22. And the voice of soul 22 is Tina Fey of Saturday Night Live fame and many other programs and movies. Now, soul 22 does not want to be born into this world, just like Joe didn't want to die. Why? She can't find her quote-unquote spark. What is her spark? Now, in the movie, your spark, and this is a little bit different from the ancient philosopher's idea of your life spark or your life soul. This is your passion. So she just can't find anything, any good reason to want to come to Earth, anything to get excited about living for. So she will not take that final step to be united to a human body. And she's constantly, these mentors come and go and try to get her to complete her journey to Earth. But all she wants is just to be left alone, to kind of sulk. And eventually, she makes a deal with Joe. Now, Joe is mistaken for one of these mentors. And Joe says, listen, I'm going to help you find your spark. And you're going to do something for me. You're going to get me back to Earth. Because she's got this activated Earth badge. She can get back into a body. He wants to get back to Earth so he can resume his life, resume his jazz career. And she can stay forever in the great before. He doesn't really care. He's fine with her staying there. Anyways, this is where the hilarity ensues. I'm not going to blow what happens for you here. But they eventually do find themselves on Earth. So what's going on here? When they get to Earth, soul number 22, voiced by Tina Fey, she actually kind of likes life on Earth, likes the taste of pizza, the way that music sounds, the way that the light filters through the trees. And Joe, when he sees her kind of interacting with life in a body, he gets a new lease on his own life, a new perspective on life. And he realizes that his life has been so focused on his career, on his jazz career and on music. It's been such a singular pursuit that he's missed out on a lot of life that's going on around him. He's just so hyper-focused on this one thing that he hasn't seen things in a holistic way. And so 22, soul number 22, is getting excited about life, and Joe's getting a new perspective on life. All right, couple problems with this film. First of all, there's a lot of dualistic ideas here in the movie. This idea that really your body, your soul, it doesn't really matter which body a soul goes with. That's kind of the thought that you get from watching this film, that that people's bodies are simply meat sacks that could be inhabited by anybody. So there's really a lack of an appearance of what we might call the theology of the body, popularized, of course, by St. John Paul II. And in the theology of the body, the concept is you don't just have a body, you are a body. You are body-soul unities. You're not a soul trapped in a body or utilizing a body for a period of time. You are your body. You're a body-soul unity. In fact, God thinks so much of the body, you're going to get it back. You're going to get a glorified, resurrected body at the end of time. So if you do die before the second coming of Christ, as most people have so far, guess what? Yes, your soul could be in heaven with Christ, hopefully, but that's not your final state. You're going to get a resurrection body united with your eternal soul, and once again, you're going to be as God intended, a body-soul unity. So that's something to keep in mind here. So there's really a lack of that sense in the film. And also, one of the things about this film, and I mentioned this before, that the otherworldly parts of the film seemed a lot less real than what was going on planet Earth. I remember watching Thor. Remember the first Thor film that came out in 2011? There's this otherworldly realm of Asgard. And I felt that the movie did a great job of making Asgard feel more real than planet Earth. It just felt that way to me when I was watching the movie. Not so with Soul. And as one reviewer said, this movie could have made this point a lot more strongly if it had just stayed in Queens, that the entire movie was based in Queens and New York. Jazz music itself could provide rich fields to explore how to balance fatalism with freedom and self-expression. The people in Joe's life could have offered great insight into the question of how to embrace the joys and complexities of embodied life. Instead, the movie spends more than half its time in an imagined metaphysical realm that has no anchor in any theology or mythology and treats Joe's life as simply a sketch for philosophical reflection instead of something particular and exquisite to be enjoyed. Now, let me just unpack that a little bit here. And by the way, this is also one of the best parts of the movie to me. The part that takes place in Queens, in his life on Earth, and it's such incredible animation. The way that the sun comes through the windows of the train as he's commuting, the leaves falling from the trees. There's a beautiful scene in the movie where Joe is contemplating his past life and all the beauty of ordinary life. He's playing the piano. He's reminiscing about his youth, watching the fireworks from his rooftop in Queens with his parents, subway tokens, just these little items. And it just speaks to me about the imminence of God, that God is there in the present moment, in ordinary life, and we've got to find God there. It's so important. And actually, that part of the movie really choked me up. It almost chokes me up just remembering it. It was really well done. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Now, I want to talk about some of the metaphysical aspects a little bit more detail about the movie Soul. Now, in Soul, you don't get much of a peek into heaven. You get this idea that souls are on their way to the great beyond, which we're assuming is something like heaven. This great light looks pretty good. The music sounds great. Joe's kind of climbing this ladder to eternity, and he wants to get out of this and go back to Earth. But he sees historical figures along the way, like Abraham Lincoln, George Orwell, Mother Teresa. And there's no real sense that there might be a hell in their version of the afterlife. They at least don't talk about that. And this is kind of interesting, too, because when you think about near-death experiences, it might be incorporating some of these ideas. A lot of people say that there is no eternal hell because of what people report in their NDEs or near-death experiences. A lot of people say, I had this experience where I was going towards a bright light. It was quite pleasant. I didn't want to go back. This looked great. And I was actually disappointed when I was resuscitated and brought back to life. You see this all the time in the literature about near-death experiences. So a lot of people postulate from that, well, everybody's going to heaven because nobody ever says, oh, you know, I was headed to this, you know, incredibly dark place and, you know, I had this feeling of dread. Nobody ever says that. They always say they're going to this light and they hear this incredible music. Well, that to me, I'm like, hang on here. That doesn't mean that there isn't an eternal hell. Because guess what the Bible says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10. Here's what St. Paul writes. He says, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each of us may receive what is due us for the things done while in the body, whether good or evil. So in other words, no matter where you're going, ultimately, you do have to appear before the judgment seat of Christ. And I would think that that's a pretty bright place, and that's a pretty attractive place to be in the presence of Christ. So just because you're headed towards the light doesn't mean you're going to stay there. That's kind of my take on it. Not having had a near-death experience on my own so far, that's what I think. That's my take, and I'm sticking to it. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, reviewing the movie Soul, the Disney Pixar movie Soul that came out over the holiday season. Perhaps you've seen it, perhaps you haven't. So what about this idea of pre-existing souls? A lot of the movie takes place in this, you know, sort of this eternal area that where there are these pre-existing souls and they're waiting to inhabit bodies. Is this a Catholic idea? The place is called the Great Before. Well, no. The short answer to the question is no. We Catholics don't believe that there are pre-existing souls. We believe that God creates each individual soul at the moment of conception. God partners with our human parents. You know, they provide the body. Well, ultimately, God provides everything because he created all things from nothing. But your parents provide the body, if you will, and God provides your eternal soul. So there's no such place in Catholic theology for this idea of pre-existing souls. However, what's really interesting is that Pope Benedict XVI, our beloved emeritus pope, spoke about something that's, it's not pre-existing souls. He doesn't believe in that, of course, but he sort of said, and he said this at a homily, by the way, for it was a memorial mass for someone. In his homily, he said that God somehow imprints a memory of eternity onto the soul when he creates it. That's basically what he was getting at. And here's a quote from Pope Benedict from this homily. He said, "The memory of the Creator is engraved in the depths of our being. It is also a memory of the future, because it is the certainty that we come from the goodness of God and we are called to reach the goodness of God." End of quote. That's an incredible thought, that God somehow imprints a memory of our own eternity onto the soul when he creates it. So somehow we have this longing for our eternal home, a homesickness, if you will, even if we're here on planet Earth, and somehow we recall that we came from God, and we're called to go to God for all eternity. And if you read the encyclical, and it was actually the first encyclical that came out from Pope Francis, but essentially Benedict wrote it. He was kind of working on it already. He had done most of it before he decided that, you know, God didn't want him to officially be pope anymore, and he stepped back. Francis took it over, and he published it under his name, but essentially it was written by Benedict. Francis threw in a couple things here and there, but this idea is also in that encyclical. It's called Memoria Futuri, sort of a memory of the future. It's an interesting concept, to be sure, but we can say this for sure, that in the Catholic imagination, in Catholic theology, there is no such thing as pre-existing souls, if you will. And by the way, I realized, Lucas, I'm sorry, I forgot to play the clip from Soul. So let's just play the clip, and you can call me after this clip and give me your thoughts on this. So here's the clip from the movie Soul.
Is this heaven?
No, it's the great before.
This is where new souls get their personalities, quirks, and interests before they go to Earth.
Meet 22.
I don't want to go to Earth.
Stop fighting this.
I don't want to.
Okay, look, I already know everything about Earth, and I don't want anything to do with it.
You're missing out on the joys of life, like pizza. I can't smell. We can't taste either.
All that stuff is in your body.
No smell, no taste.
Or touch. See?
Okay, I get it.
Is living really worth dying for? You're still alive?
Can you help me get back?
No way!
There I am. What are we waiting for?
Wait, not me!
So there you have it. That's a clip from Soul. And I thought it was an interesting film. I enjoyed it, but I would have enjoyed it a lot more if they didn't spend so much time in the great before. If you want to react to that, if you want to give me a call, give me your thoughts on that, 1-888-914-9149. Don't know if you saw the movie, don't know if you liked it. Want to hear your thoughts. Or you can tweet at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Got a lot of exciting stuff. We got to take a quick break right here on the show, but I want to talk to you about somebody who was involved with Pixar and the tragic idol that unfortunately ended his life on Earth. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Just before the break, we talked about the Disney Pixar film Soul and my take on that from a Catholic perspective, from a theological perspective. And as you know, one of the guys who really kept Pixar afloat before it became this behemoth that it is today was Steve Jobs, who, of course, founded Apple Computer along with Steve Wozniak in Woz's garage. You know, a lot of big things start with small, small, humble beginnings. And he was the majority shareholder for a while of Pixar, really saved the company, saved its future. And talking about him, you know, he had a lot of imagination, obviously, like the creators of these very interesting Pixar films, technically amazing. What he did with Apple Computer and with the creation of the iPhone really changed the world. But unfortunately, he had an idol in his life, and it wound up costing him his life. But before we get into that, I just want to play a little clip from him speaking at a commencement speech. This is one of the most famous speeches that he ever gave.
I was lucky. I found what I love to do early in life. Woz and I started Apple in my parents' garage when I was 20. We worked hard, and in 10 years, Apple had grown from just the two of us in a garage into a $2 billion company with over 4,000 employees. We just released our finest creation, the Macintosh, a year earlier, and I'd just turned 30. And then I got fired. How can you get fired from a company you started? What had been the focus of my entire adult life was gone, and it was devastating. I really didn't know what to do for a few months. I felt that I had let the previous generation of entrepreneurs down. I was a very public failure, and I even thought about running away from the valley. But something slowly began to dawn on me. I still loved what I did.
We are going to make it or break it based on whether we can provide products to higher education and services and relationships to higher education that no one else provides. And I think we ought to spend 100% of our time thinking about that. And if we can't do that, then we ought to go broke.
And so I decided to start over. I didn't see it then, but it turned out that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. The heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again, less sure about everything. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life.
I love that thought of being a beginner again. And we need to feel that way in the spiritual life too, every day, to begin again. Just like Philip Rivers has on his cap, right? The quarterback of the Colts, Nunk Chepi, you know, begin again. Got to do that every day. Now, Steve Jobs had an interesting spiritual experience at the end of his life as well. Before he died of cancer in 2011, he apparently had this experience, and people at his bedside saw him say this. He just said, "Wow. Oh, wow." Now, nobody really knows what he saw, but maybe he was headed towards that light. You know? Anyways, well, we need to pray for the repose of his soul, of course, as well. And he had a lot of issues in life. He was a brilliant guy. And if you've read the famous biography of Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson, you know this. Brilliant guy, but he had some issues. He could be really, really hard on people. And he would do, you know, socially reprehensible things like park in handicapped spots and things like that. But really, ultimately, what caused his death was he had an idol in his life. And on our other program, the other program I host on Relevant Radio, The Faith Explained, today we talked about in the book of Revelation in chapter 22, there's an angel who's revealing these incredible things to the apostle John. And John is so blown away by this that he's tempted to worship the angel. And he actually tries to do that. And the angel says, "Stop! You know, don't do that. I'm a fellow servant with you. You've only got to worship God. This would be idolatry if you were to try to worship me." And so if the apostle John can be tempted, of all people, you know, who looked after the Virgin Mary, who was so close to Christ, if he can be tempted by idolatry, we certainly can as well. And heck, let's face it, even some of the creations of Steve Jobs and Apple can be idols in people's lives, like MacBooks and iPhones, iPads, all that sort of stuff. But interestingly enough, the idol in his life had nothing to do with technology or money. He actually wasn't a materialistic person. For many years, Steve Jobs lived in a home that had no furnishings in it. He would sit on the floor. He had his record player. He loved music. But there was really nothing there. It was kind of depressing, actually. But his actual idol in his life turned out to be, of all things, food. Now, if you know anything about this guy, for most of his life, he was pretty thin. This is maybe the most surprising revelation of the book by Walter Isaacson on Steve Jobs. From early in his life, He was obsessed with food in ways that increasingly dominated his attention, distorted his relationships, and affected all of his decisions. So here's what Isaacson said. He went on these various diets. Some of them were based on raw food. Almost always they were vegetarian or vegan. And they gave him this sense of exhilaration, of having control. And this is a big factor in his psychology. He liked to have control. And he would project what people used to call his reality distortion field. He could get people to do things. It was in some ways very positive because he got people to do things who worked at Apple that they didn't think that they were capable of. And there's a story in the book about when they made the first iPhone, he talked to the CEO of Corning, the company that eventually made Gorilla Glass, the glass covering fairly scratch-proof for the iPhones. It gets better and better with every generation. But the first time they tried this, you know, Jobs was explaining what they had in mind. He said, there's no way we can do this. The scale, there's no way we can actually do this. And Jobs said to him, you know, don't be afraid. And he just kept talking to him until he believed that he could actually do it. And they did. They got it done. It was a technological marvel. So he really focused on control. And this was certainly the case when it came to food. He was a perfectionist in many ways, but eventually this became an addiction and it gradually demanded more and more of his life. Just like any idol, it's always going to demand more and more while giving you back less and less and eventually taking everything from you. And in Jobs' case, it cost him his relationships, cost him a lot of ill will with his family, and ultimately his own life, his health and his life. In October of 2003, he had a routine scan, and it turned up evidence of pancreatic cancer. Now, his doctors expected the worst at this point because pancreatic cancer at any age is normally a swift death sentence. But when his doctors saw the results of his biopsy, they actually cried tears of joy because he had something called islet cell cancer, which is a rare version of pancreatic cancer that's very slow growing, and it's almost always curable. As long as you have quick surgery to remove the pancreas. And it's at that moment when Steve Jobs found this out, that his idol, which was really using food as a way of trying to control everything, his idol failed him. And here's how Walter Isaacson put it in his biography. He said, and I quote, "To the horror of his friends and wife, Jobs decided not to have surgery to remove the tumor, which was the only accepted medical approach. He said, quote, I really didn't want them to open up my body, so I tried to see if a few other things would work, end of quote. He told me this later with a hint of regret. Specifically, he kept to a strict vegan diet for 9 months. As his friends and family pleaded with him to have the surgery, Jobs refused. Not until July of the next year did he consent to the quote-unquote modified Whipple procedure to remove part of his pancreas. But during the surgery, doctors found that the cancer had spread to the liver. Jobs would never again be free of cancer. And just over 8 years later, he was dead at the age of 56. End of quote. What a great tragedy. If only he had had the initial surgery, in all likelihood, he would be alive today. And I always think about that when it comes to Apple and their innovations. I'm a big Apple fan. And I know the company's done well, obviously, under Tim Cook, the most valuable brand in the world. But I always think, what would have happened if he had stayed? He had such incredible ideas about technology, about society. And he would email people. He had some interesting moral ideas, too. He had this famous email exchange with a blogger who was really upset that Jobs would not allow pornographic apps in the App Store for the iPhone. And Jobs would actually email these guys back in the middle of the night. And he would say, you know what, you may not think pornography is a problem now, but when you start having children, you'll understand that it is. And we're not going to do that at Apple. So you know what, he had an interesting moral sense. And he certainly understood work very, very well. There's a story in the book about when he was a child, Walter Isaacson relates, that Steve Jobs was given the task of painting their backyard fence. And he did kind of a crappy job when it came to the backside of the fence. And his father found out and he said, well, why'd you do such a terrible job? And he said, well, the other side of the fence, nobody sees that. We only see the side on the inside. His father said, no, that is absolutely unacceptable. nobody may see that except for us, but you'll know it's there. You'll know it's like that. And to this day, when you open up an Apple computer, a MacBook, it is as beautiful on the inside. It's not a jumble of wires and circuits. It's so beautifully arranged. It's almost a work of art on the inside as well. So he really understood the value of work well done. And I just think he had a lot of great human qualities that if only he could have met Christ, if only he could have entered into the reality of the Catholic Church, wow, I mean, some real magic could have happened. So it's a great loss. And thinking about Pixar, of course, it always leads me to think about Steve Jobs. So if you want to talk about that, if you want to talk about the movie Soul and its outlook on the afterlife, or the great before, if you will, you can call me at 1-888-914-9149 if you want to react to what I just said about Steve Jobs. You can do that as well. We're going to go to the phones right now. Brian is calling from Bangor, Maine. Brian, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, Kale. How are you? Can you hear me?
I can. I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Sure. You know, whenever I call in and I'm waiting, the subject seems to change like three
That's
or four
okay.
times. But last night you actually went to Steve Gannon,
Rich Gannon, yeah.
The quarterback there, Rich Gannon,
mm-hmm.
yeah, which was awesome. So I was like switching gears to go to football. And then tonight it went to Steve Jobs. So
you never know what I'm going to talk about, Brian. It's like a Catholic variety show.
I love it. That's exactly how I am too. I just, you know, like when I get going, I keep rolling. But anyway, the movie Soul
mm-hmm.
got me thinking that at least, you know, like for nuns or for you know, it's the world against Christianity and so forth. At least if we can open the door and just get people thinking about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it's great. And I think, you know, Bishop Barron always, he's a big movie fan, and he's always mm-hmm. looking at these intricacies of the films and so forth. So I mm-hmm. agree with you. The flip side of that is, everything you said, I thought was right on target. That, you know, kind of presented a different kind of a warp, a disconnect. But at least it got people thinking.
Yeah, I think that's.
Anyways, that was my thought.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for that call, Brian. Really appreciate that. It's Brian calling from Bangor, Maine. And as you know, Brian, I grew up not too far from there in the province of Nova Scotia, just a quick boat ride away. And yeah, I think that's one of the benefits that can come from this. Just any talk of the supernatural, the metaphysical, the afterlife is kind of a good thing, because at least it'll get people thinking. Now, the tragedy is that people stop there and they say, well, they just kind of accept that these types of ideas, what they're presenting, their vision of the afterlife, is it. So hopefully it'll draw people to do some more study and do some more investigation, because obviously it's extremely important. We all do have an eternal soul, if you'll pardon the pun. And it's important to know that we have an origin, as Pope Benedict said. We have a memory imprinted in our soul of where we came from. We were created by Almighty God for a purpose, that we might enjoy Him for all eternity in heaven and glorify Him here on earth as well. And that's where we're headed. We're headed to the afterlife, so we need to get ready now. And so thank you very much for that call, Brian. Really appreciate that. And yeah, we do kind of flip around from topic to topic, talk about different things. And that's really what Catholicism is all about. The word Catholic, of course, means universal. So we talk about anything and everything under the sun and try to find God in it. So that's super fascinating, I think, this movie and just how it gets people thinking. I overall, I would say it's worth a watch for sure. Has its flaws, but great message there. Great message there for sure. And you know, when you think about movies like Soul, Pixar, Steve Jobs, even the great imagination that's involved in that is really important to understand. We look at creatives like this, people like Jobs and people like you know, George Lucas, who was also involved in Pixar's creation. We think, wow, these guys just have such an incredible gift for this. But everybody has an imagination. In fact, it's crucial to who we are. It's crucial to our functioning as human persons created in the image of God. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that, because I read an article recently called The Top 10 Things That You Should Know About the Imagination by Matthew Risticcia. And he made a lot of interesting, very salient points that got me thinking, really fired my imagination, if you will. And the first point is this, in terms of the top 10 things that you should know about the imagination, everybody has one. And sometimes you think, no, I don't have one. I'm not creative. I'm more of an engineer type. No, everyone has an imagination. It's not just for artists. It's not just for kids who have playtime and they can create all these fantastic characters in their own mind. It's not just for fans of comic books and the sci-fi genre. It's the ability of the mind to think in pictures. And we use our imaginations all the time. Whether we're planning, you have to have an imagination to plan. Whether you're remembering, you have to use your imagination to remember something that happened to you in the past. When you're praying, even the imagination can come into view. So it's absolutely crucial. We all have it. And it's an important power of the human mind. That's the second thing you need to know about the imagination. It's a really important power of your mind. Along with reason, the will, your emotions, imagination is an important facet of your soul slash mind. And again, your memory employs your imagination so that you can recall events of the past. And your imagination also lets you contemplate your life in the present. It enables you to think abstractly, think outside yourself a little bit. And again, as I said, for future decision-making, for plans that you want to make, maybe after the pandemic, you want to go somewhere, well, you need your imagination to imagine that future. This is the source of art and invention. You know, before Steve Jobs created the iPhone, it had to exist in his mind. He had to have thought of it before he could actually create it out of material. So imagination is like that. It makes reading possible. We wouldn't be able to read without an imagination, because we have to be able to look at those, the ink on the page, and translate that into what the author is imagining. And you're forming your own picture of that. The third thing is that imagination is actually part of the image of God himself. Think about that. If you have an imagination, that had to have been created by God. So it's a great gift from God. And we also have to remember that he has a creative imagination too. He created the universe from nothing, but he certainly had a plan for it. And he perceives the past. He can look at the past. He can look at the present. He can look at the future. It's all there for him because he's outside of time. He's in eternity. And the way that God's word, when we read the scriptures, and we focus a lot on this on my other show, The Faith Explained, when we read the scriptures, this is a huge way that God speaks to us, and he speaks to our imagination. When we read the word, we imagine the best version of ourselves that we can be, a saint. We imagine the future life of the New Jerusalem. We can think about the struggles that real people went through whose lives are talked about in the sacred scriptures, and we can relate that to our own situation. So we need imagination to read the scriptures, and it's important. It's such an important aspect of the way he's created us in his image. We got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about the importance of the imagination in your life. We'll be right back.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back. We're having an interesting discussion about the role of the imagination in the Catholic life, really the top 10 things that you need to know about your imagination, which is part of the goodness that is you. It's a good part of the creation of each human being. It's a facet that all of us have. We need to learn how to harness that imagination and use it to God's glory. So just to recap what we talked about before the break, top 10 things you need to know about your imagination. Number one, everyone has one. Number two, it's an important power of the human mind. Number three, it's a facet of how we are created in the image of God. And number four, point number four, where we left off, the imagination is important if we're going to live in a moral fashion, if we're going to live morally. We need imagination to empathize with others, to assume the perspective of somebody else. As St. Paul says in Romans chapter 12, verse 15, we need to rejoice with those who rejoice, and we need to weep with those who weep. We certainly have a lot of practice with that over the last few months, right? Everything that's going on. the pandemic, you know, all the strife that's happening. And Jesus, of course, had compassion on the crowds. And that's why he would drop what he was doing. He even wanted to rest. And he didn't, because he knew they had needs. He empathized with them. He had compassion for them. We have to do that too. That takes imagination. When Jesus commands us to love our neighbors as we love ourselves, that requires a lot of imagination as well. Like, Jesus' version of the golden rule is so much more challenging than that which is fostered by something like the golden rule. You see this in a lot of different religions and philosophies, but the way Jesus frames it is so much more challenging, because usually it's framed as a negative. Don't do to others what you wouldn't want them to do to you. But Jesus makes it much more challenging and positive by saying, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So you really have to think about that. You really have to imagine, how would I like to be treated in an ideal situation, and how can I bring that about in the lives of others? Wow, that's more than just a negative don't do something. We've got to do something, and that is where the challenge lies, and that's where imagination lies. The fifth thing that we have to realize is that our imaginations are fallen. It's a part of ourselves that was created to be good by God, but just like everything else in our lives, it's touched by sin, original sin. And even after baptism, when the consequences of original sin are washed away, we still have to deal with its after effects. Its after effects. And that's known as, what is a $5 word, concupiscence. The fact that we still are prey to temptation, even after our baptism. And so the human imagination is fallen as well. And we see in the book of Genesis, and we're going to be looking at the book of Genesis as our next topic on the Faith Explained. We're going to finish up Revelation and go back to the first book in the Bible, Genesis. I can't wait for that. But in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, and this is around the time of the flood, God saw, it says, that every imagination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil continually. So this is an example of the fallen human imagination. In point number 6, the top 10 things you need to know about your imagination, you're listening to the K.L. Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Number 6 is, you need to understand that we actually can sin with our imaginations. It is possible to sin with your imagination. Since the fall, brought about by our good pals, our first parents, Adam and Eve, our inner sinfulness can come out in our imaginations. For example, one of the ways this happens is in impure fantasies. And this can constitute what Jesus says is adultery in the heart. In the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, verse 28, he says, you know, you've heard it said, don't commit adultery. And that's true. Don't do it. It's one of the Ten Commandments. But I tell you that if anyone has looked at a woman with lust, he has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And, you know, people look around and say, well, then who can be saved? But as Pope John Paul reminded us, Pope John Paul II, in his Theology of the Body, he said, should we fear these words or have trust in their saving power? Because God will never command us to do something that's impossible. His help is always there. And so Jesus is basically saying that the Ten Commandments are like, we're all nuts here, of course, in one way or another. But if you look at a peanut, the Ten Commandments are like the outer shell. They're the outward actions that we should do or not do. But what he's talking about is the inner nut inside the shell, and that's you and me. And our actions, our motivations, the inner life, that's what we've got to control. And we have a whole show on Relevant Radio called The Inner Life, about spiritual direction. And so we need to get a hold of that. We need to sanctify that. And it is possible with the help of Christ. It is possible. We can deal with that by his grace. Can't do it on our own. We need his grace. So now, I'm not talking about impure thoughts that maybe pop up and like the clouds rolling by. They move on. You can dismiss them. You can get them out of the way. But I'm talking about when somebody really chews over these thoughts, indulges in these lustful fantasies, then they can become very, very sinful. And that's true for other sins too. Thinking about violence, I'd like to take, you know, revenge on this person. What would you do if there were no consequences? Other types of temptations. So you can see how the imagination can be a major spiritual problem for people. Now, the good news is, I had to laugh at this on relevantradio.com and on the Relevant Radio app. There's an article by Lindsay Kettner, and someone had asked Patrick Madrid on his show, is sinning in a dream actually sinful? And this guy had called in, and he said, man, I had this dream in which I committed this terrible sin. You know, am I actually guilty of a sin? He woke up, and he wasn't sure. So he called Patrick, and Patrick said, don't worry, if you commit a terrible sin in a dream, you're not guilty of that sin. Why is that? Well, Patrick said that the only way that you can commit a sin of which you'd be formally guilty is that you would have had to intend to do it. And when you're asleep, obviously, you can't control what's going on there in your brain. And so it's not a sin. Committing a sin in a dream is not an actual sin. You'd have to actually reflect consciously and know what you're doing when you're committing a mortal sin and to be guilty of that. So don't worry. And then Patrick said, of course, that he's had some crazy dreams as well, and that he's actually, you know, in his dreams, he's committed sins. I've never done that. No, I'm only kidding. So it's a load off of everybody's minds. It's, you know, dreams don't count. When we talk about sitting with our imaginations, dreams don't count. So thanks, Patrick, for that. Point number 7. Imagination is really the source of the sin of idolatry. It's breaking the first commandment. As it says in the book of Deuteronomy, God says, I brought you out of Egypt, and you shall have no strange gods before me. I am the Lord. So that first commandment, to have no other gods, nothing in the place of God. Idolatry is really putting a creature in the place of the Creator. And we see that if we look through the history of salvation, if we read through the scriptures, people are always trying to make these graven images, whether it's the golden calf, you know, something in the creation that they want to worship. And it can be a person. For us, it can be a gadget. It can be money. It can be, there's so many things. The human heart is a factory of idols. So we've got to understand that really the source of all that is the imagination. So we've got to submit it to God's rule. And number 8, we can redeem our imaginations. We can redeem our imaginations and use them for good. The power that was unleashed through the passion, Christ's death, his resurrection, the gift of the Holy Spirit, not only allows us to get forgiveness of sins, but we can actually live a new life. Paul says we're a new creation in Christ. And one of the best ways to transform our imagination is to immerse yourself in the scriptures, in God's word, and see things, see the world, see life the way God sees it. That's really, really important. Number 9. And we're almost through the top 10. The imagination is also important for apologetics. And Dr. Holly Ordway was recently on the program. We had an amazing interview in which she talked about the role of imagination in apologetics. When you read writers like J.R.R. Tolkien, The Lord of the Rings, he used the imagination to create this incredible world that communicated a lot of solid Catholic truth. And so we can do that as well. We can use our imagination. When we read the scriptures, we can put ourselves in the passage, make ourselves. Many spiritual writers have recommended this. St. Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, in his spiritual exercises, St. Jose Maria Escrivá, founder of Opus Dei, reminded us that when we read the gospel, we can be a character in the scene. It's a great way to experience it from a new angle, using our imagination. So there we go. Look at the history of art, great Catholic art and great works of literature written by Catholics, works of imagination. We can use this to foster our devotion. And that's point number 10, that the church has a rich history of using the imagination for God's glory. So it's all there, and it's all incredible. Lots of great stuff. And so think about that, imagine that. And one thing, my imagination was kicking into high gear. I just heard about, and Patrick Alog, I don't know if you heard this, James Harden, to switch gears completely to basketball. We do talk about sports from time to time on the show. Rich Gannon, NFL quarterback, was on the show yesterday. It was a fantastic interview about football, family, and faith. You're going to want to download that episode from relevantradio.com or stream it if you didn't catch it. But Patrick, you're a big basketball fan. Did you hear about the Beard being traded to the New Jersey Nets?
Yes, and actually, I never even told you this, Kale. James Harden actually went to my old high school.
You got to be kidding me.
No, wow. No, I didn't go when he went there. He's a couple years younger than me. But mm-hmm. James Harden from Artesia High School, yep. I did hear about the trade going from Houston to Brooklyn Nets.
Wow, that's a super team right there. We talked about, you know, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson in, of course, Golden State forming a super team. Well, this triumvirate might be even better. You know, KD, Harden, and Kyrie Irving.
I don't know. I mean, they're talented, but it's going to be you're putting like all these combustible personalities together in one team. I think it could make for a great TV.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And wow, if Kyrie ever comes back to the team, you know, Uncle Drew is kind of acting like your crazy uncle right now. You know, a couple years ago, he was espousing the flat Earth theory. He was roundly criticized for that. Pun intended. Did you catch that?
Sorry.
I spent a lot of time on that one. Anyways, so yeah, that's a lot to process, and wow, I think I need to have a drink.
Well,
of course, in moderation.
Kale, we'll warn you if you go off just like Kyrie, okay?
Okay, all right. Well, listen, speaking of having a drink, you know, G.K. Chesterton said that we thank God for beer by not drinking too much of it. And who's coming up next? Guest hosting for Timory, it's Father Matthew Spencer on Trending. And he brews his own beer. You'll have to call in and ask him about this. And a while back on Twitter, he had a poll for the year of St. Joseph. He had a couple of choices. He was going to make some different beers and people could vote on it. And the winner was the Terror of Demons Porter, with over 51% of the vote. I voted for him to make a wheat beer called Flee to Egyptian Wheat, but we only got 7% of the vote, so we didn't get it. But I still want him to brew me some, and he's got a good show brewing for you up next on Trending, so you're going to want to stick around for that. Well, listen, it's been another whirlwind hour on The Cale Clark Show. If you missed an episode, you can always download the podcast from the Relevant Radio app. Really want to thank Lucas Holt for producing, Karen Moran for working social media, Patrick Alog for chatting some basketball and working the phones for us. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.